Thank you very much. I'm doing a postdoc, in Japan, American items. And today I'm going to talk about the black hole ringdown and how we can model the Gaussian wave ringdown out of the fluctuating black hole. Then today's talk is based on these papers. So if you are interested in this topic, please look at these papers. So as you may know, the black holes has crazy normal modes. And then the so as like a kind of stuff. For example, the any objects on the Earth and in the universe. Most of things have their own crazy normals, then black holes also do. Then how we can see the crazy normals of black hole? So for example, we can see the Gaussian waves emitted from the black hole merger events. So first in spiral comes and merger, then ring down. Then ring down emits the damped oscillation in Gaussian waves, then this can be decomposed into multiple quasi normal modes of the remnant black hole. Then we can model the ring down waveform as like this. So this term leads to the damping effect. And this is oscillation of the Gaussian waves. Then tau n is a damping time, and f n is a frequency for each quasi normal mode of the black hole. Then both of them, damping time and frequency, are determined only by the mass and the angular momentum of the remnant black hole. Then, for example, fixing the spin parameter to 0.8 and LM2, the quasi normal frequencies. As like this, it takes the complex values, and the real part is the frequency fn, and the imaginary part is the damping rate 1 over tau n. The extending to the higher angular modes, as the black hole has a spheroidal shape, so it can be decomposed into the spheroidal harmonics. Then we have multiple fundamental modes and overtones. Anyway, black holes have an infinite number of quasi normal modes. Then why is a black hole ringing important? It's simply because for example, the general relativity, which is the standard theory of gravity, predicts the precise number of the complex value of the quasi normal frequency. Once we measure each quasi normal mode from the ring down waveform, by which we can test the general relativity in strong gravity regime. So black hole quasi normal modes includes the reflects the space-time configuration around the black hole near the horizon. So that's why we can test gravity in strong gravity regimes. So measurement of quasi normal modes from the ring down is very important to understand gravity. Then, as I have explained, the fundamental modes have the least damped mode among the quasi normal frequencies once we fix the angular modes. LM2, for example, in this plot. So at ray times, other tones are strongly damped, then the fundamental mode only survive in the signal. So you may think the fundamental modes is the most important one, as the other overtones highly damped at ray times. But recently, this point of view is changed as like this. So previously, almost people thought that the ringdown. Russian wave ringdown starts at rare times where fundamental modes dominate the signal. So yes, if this is the case, the overtones are less important since it quickly decays. But what if the ringdown starts earlier than expected ever? For example, let's say it starts at the strain peak. Indeed, this group has proposed that the ringdown starts at the strain peak, or even before that, where the overtones are highly excited. If this is true, this is very important since the, let's say the ringdown starts very at rare times where the amplitude is very small, reading the quasi-normal frequencies from such a tiny signal is very challenging. But if the ringdown, which can be represented by the superposition of multiple quasi-normal modes, starts at the strain peak, precisely measures quasi-normal modes with the higher SNR, signal-to-noise ratio. So checking if this statement is true or not, that's a very important thing. Then the claim is supported by this analysis, based on the fitting analysis of quasi-normal modes to the new, for example, numerical general relativity waveform. So fitting analysis works well if the mismatch between the data and the model takes the small value. Then they confirm that the fitting analysis works well even for the data in which the ringdown starts at the strain peak, like this in the time domain waveform. This horizon axis is the time. Then, as I have explained, the ringdown waveform can be modeled by the multiple quasi-normal modes. So they use the fundamental mode plus the seven overtones to fit the data. Then they read the amplitude for each quasi-normal modes. Then that's the last line. Then they also find that the overtones, especially the fourth and the fifth tones, are highly excited. The other group also confirmed that the fourth and the fifth overtones are highly excited, even for different initial conditions. The fourth and the fifth tones are important. Why? The question is, why are the fourth and the fifth overtones dominant if the ringdown starts earlier than expected ever? Okay, so once we admit that, but still we have such a question. Yeah, why the fourth and fifth overtones dominant? Is there any theoretical reason or evidence? Since this statement and this result is supported only by the fitting analysis, I wanted to know the reason why the fourth and fifth overtones are so special. Why is it so? Then this is my main motivation in my previous work. Then before introducing my work, I have to explain this. So quasi-normal modes can be characterized by the, as I have explained, the frequencies, the real part of the quasi-normal frequency, and the damping rate, that's the imaginary part of it. But actually there's a third one, that's the excitability for each quasi-normal mode. That's, as I will explain later, it is nothing but the residue at the pole quasi-normal mode of the Green's function of the black hole perturbation. Then this is known as the excitation factors. This is also a kind of a no-hair quantity, which depends only on the mass and the spin of the remnant black hole, as like quasi-normal frequencies. So in this sense, the excitation factor is also a universal quantity, which is independent of the initial data of the black hole perturbation. Then to explain the excitation factor and how to explain how we can compute the excitation factor, let me briefly introduce the analogy with a vibrating string. Yes, vibrating string also has its own normal modes. Then we can assign the excitation factor for each normal mode of the string. So let's consider the vibrating string. It's very simple. We have the string which has a two fixed points. Then such a string has a typical oscillation pattern as like this. Then the question is, which pattern is dominant in the amplitude? Then we can simply solve this wave equation with the Green's function technique. Then the Green's function is determined once we fix the boundary condition. In this case, we have the fixed point here. This determines the boundary condition. Then we can obtain the Green's function. Then the source term is given by the determined by the initial configuration of the string. Then that's T tilde. Then this omega sine omega pi is nothing but the round scheme between two homogeneous solutions of this. Then one satisfies a boundary condition at this point, and the other one satisfies the boundary condition at the right fixed point. Then based on the residue Cauchy's theorem, and this integration with respect to the omega reduces to the summation over the residues at the poles, which is nothing but the normal modes of the string. Then the En is the excitation factor. This is the residue of the comes from the Green's function, and Tn comes from the source term. Then this excitation factor is a quantity I have introduced in the previous slide. Then this En is determined by the the round scheme, the Green's function, and then this is proportional to the 1 over n. This means that the excitation factor takes the largest absolute value for n equal 1 mode. It's reasonable since when we play, for example, guitar, the dominant amplitude comes from this, this oscillation pattern. So we can do the same thing for the perturbation of the black hole. Then the computation is very similar to the previous one for vibrating string, but now a black hole has a spheroidal shape. So that's why this computation involves not only the Green's function and the source term, but also the spheroidal harmonics. Then, based on the residue theorem, it's same. the excitation factor comes from the Green's function of the black hole perturbation, and T comes from the source term. Then S comes from this one. Then the explicit form of the excitation factor is like this. Then here, omega LMN is a quasi-normal frequency. And the A out and A in is obtained by the homogeneous solution of the Tukovsky equation. Well, we can define the excitation factor with the Sasaki Nakamura equation or Chandrasekhar-Detweiler equation if we want. Then this quantity, excitation factor, is independent of the source factor. In other words, this is independent of the initial configuration of the black hole perturbation. This is a kind of intrinsic quantity of the black hole determined by the mass and the spins of the remnant black hole only. Then I will skip the detail to the computation for the computation, numerical computation of the excitation factor. But this is the result. I have computed the excitation factor for the fundamental modes and the overtones up to 20 tons for various spin parameters as like this. Then the, okay, so then the in the previous slide, in the previous work by the, let me say, well, this one, they use the numerical relativity waveform, which is very similar to the GW15914 events. Then in the event, the remnant spin parameter was roughly 0.7. So we can compare this with the previous results. Then you can see the two highest excitation factor comes at the fourth and the fifth overtones, which looks very consistent with the another group, this one. So it looks good, but we have to be careful since the what they looked at is how to say, the excitation coefficients, the amplitude for each quasi-normal modes. In other words, what they looked at is E times T. But in this plot, what I have computed is the excitation factor only. Okay. So in this sense, we can directly compare the excitation factor to this result. Also, this is supporting evidence of the importance of the fourth and fifth overtones. Okay. But this result is based on the numerical relativity, which simulates the comparable mass ratio merger events. So it's highly challenging to compute the source factor from the first principle. But now the previous work computed the estimated the excitation coefficients based on the fitting analysis, and now I have computed the excitation factor up to 7 tons or 20 tons based on the perturbation theory of the GL. So to estimate the source factor, we can now just compute the C divided by E. So it's super easy to estimate the source factor. Then this is the result. The source factor T, in the last line, the source factor T is normalized by that of the fundamental mode. So by definition, it takes unity for the fundamental mode. Then the relative value of the source factor takes almost unity in this one. But on the other hand, the excitation factor is very sensitive to the overtone number 1, 4, 9, 16, 23, 24, 5, 20. So we can say the excitation factor is sensitive to the overtone number, though source factor T is insensitive to the overtone number. So it reminds me of a kind of equipartition law.
Sorry, can I ask a question here?
Sure.
Okay, so there are two things. One thing is this source term can be computed, right? So you said you compute the excitation factor using the Green's function approach. But then you, in black hole perturbation theory, in the past particle limit, you can assume the particle follows some kind of punch orbit. And you can also, you can then compute the source term for that punch orbit particle, right? So I think that can be done. And then,
so you mean the extreme mass ratio margin, for example?
Yeah, past particle limit. I mean, many results from the past particle limit can be mapped to the equal mass region. So I think that can be done. The other thing is the amplitude, right? In the table of you listed the amplitude, right? So in this Isra paper, it's not like an invariant thing, right? It depends on the time you extract the amplitude. So let's say you shift the time you read this amplitude, then this change, the amplitude changes, and the relative magnitude of the amplitude also changes. So I'm not exactly sure. I mean, you may just, I don't know, you may compare the amplitude with excitation factor at some particular time, but if you compare them with at some other time, the answer will change. So how do you justify that? How do you justify the importance of the amplitude?
Mm-hmm. Here in this computation, I implicitly assume that the so in the previous work, for example, they first read the start time of the ring down by the fitting analysis this one. Then by from this analysis, they first fix the start time of the ring down. So the time is in this sense uniquely determined if we consider the excitation of the quasi-normal modes at the start time of the ring down. In this sense, the amplitude for these amplitudes are very defined if we say that this is amplitude for the ring down at the start time of the ring down. Then if that's true, I assume that that's true. Then this excitation factor, then I implicitly assume that this excitation factor is for the also the start time, is for the start time of the ring down. Then if that is so, then
so
the
you're assuming this this black hole or the linear summation mode, this picture is still valid all the way to the peak of the waveform.
Yes.
At that point, the nonlinear effect is not relevant.
Is not too relevant. Yeah. So then actually that's a very interesting point. Then for the nonlinearity, I have the kind of conjecture on that. So also at the merger time, it looks like the nonlinear, highly nonlinear phenomenon, the merger itself. But if the common horizon forms, which surrounds the two black holes as like this, it looks like the for a distant observer, it looks like the perturbation of the unified black hole, car black holes, although the inside the common horizon is still nonlinear, we do not care the interior of the common horizon, since what we observe is just the perturbation outside the common horizon. Then indeed, there is a simulation of the formation of the common horizon for a simple situation, a head-on collision of non-spinning black holes. Then the although two black holes and do not merge yet, the common horizon appears. Then it looks like the slightly deformed spheroidal shape as like this. So if this is the case, even for this collision of the spinning black holes, we could justify the emission of the ring down from the merger situation. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I assume that even at the strain peaks, the ring down can start. And
I mean, okay, maybe I should let you continue, but are you aware of some recent papers written by the same set of authors claiming that they found nonlinear effects in the wave?
Yes.
I
know that. Yeah.
Okay.
And okay, then the may I ask a question too far? Sorry, in the for the first comment, you say that force factor can be computed even for the comparable mass ratio merger.
I'm saying you can compute it in the test particle limit and then just
In the test particle. Oh, okay. I agree with you. Okay. Yeah. Then, yeah, so far we have been discussing the analysis for the very clean data, no noise, and we just analyze the numerical relativity waveform and just find the result with the perturbation theory of GL. But what if we consider real data observed by, for example, LIGO? Then this group performed the same analysis, similar analysis for the real data GW15914. Then it looks like it's still challenging to read the quasi-normal frequencies, both real part and imaginary parts. And especially for the decaying time of the first over tone is highly uncertain. Here, delta tau is a modification of the decaying time as like this. Then here, tau 221 is the decaying time of the first over tone in GL. Then F221 is a frequency, quasi-normal frequency, real part for the first over time. But we have the modification. Then the zero of the delta tau 1 and delta F1 means that the no hair quantity. But it's uncertain as like this. However, here they looked at the remnant black hole of the spin parameter 0.7, roughly. Then, however, considering the extremal mass ratio merger or intermediate mass ratio merger, in such a situation, and indeed, such a merger event will be detectable in the future by, for example, LISAR, at the center of galaxies, we have the supermassive black holes. And if the kind of compact object falls into such a supermassive black holes here, we can see the ring down out of it. Then anyway, the supermassive black holes has higher larger spin parameters compared to the tensorama merge events. Then based on the X-ray observation, the spins of the supermassive black hole at the center of galaxies can be even larger than 0.99, surprisingly. Yeah. And then this observation plus analysis is based on the measurement of the size of the ISCO innermost stable circular orbits. And this is very sensitive to the spin parameters of the black hole. So we can measure the size of the ISCO from the X-ray observation, then it tells us the spin parameters of the supermassive black hole. Then this is the result. Then if that's true, if supermassive black holes can rapidly spin with near extreme situation, that's very interesting. And then recently, Daichi Tsuna and I wrote a paper, it's on archive, titled by the slowly decaying of a rapidly spinning black hole. Yes, so rapidly spinning black hole with the slowly decaying ringdown. And if we consider the extremal one intermediate mass ratio merges, the higher angular modes can be also highly excited. Then this is a spectrum of the GW signal for each angular modes 2, 2, 3, 4, 4, 5, 5. This is a spin parameter 4.8. 2, 2 dominates the signal, but 4.99 extreme mass ratio merges, and the 5.5 looks even 5.5 dominates the signal. Then at the peak, the quasi normal modes of each angular modes are excited. Then for 2.2, the quasi normal frequencies is like this. So the vertical axis in the imaginary part of the quasi normal frequencies, it's nothing but the decaying rate. Then for fundamental, first, second, blah, 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 these quasi normal frequencies has a small decaying rate. In other words, for highly spinning black holes, the quasi normal frequencies are slowly decaying. It means that we could measure the quasi normal frequencies with higher SNR as they do not quickly decay. Then we perform the computation of the base factor to compare the two model and quasi normal model with GR quasi normal frequencies and the model with the modified quasi normal frequencies. What we done is very similar to the previous work by Max EC et al. This one. Then this shows that we plot solid dashed and the dot dashed lines. This and then each line shows the inside the line has the highest base factor. For solid line 3.2, it's almost the same though. Yeah, for solid line, the inside solid line, the base factor takes 3.2. Then for dashed line, larger than 10. And for dot dashed line, larger than 100. Then it looks like this is a kind of constraint on the deformation of the quasi-normal frequencies. Then if we modify the fundamental mode plus overtones, both, all of them, the modification is constrained as like this. Then it looks like the higher spin parameters is even better than the intermediate spin parameters. Then even for the overtones, the modification of overtones only, in this case, 0.99 looks better. But still, as in the previous work by Max Easy et al., the determination of the decaying time is relatively larger, as like this. Delta Fy is the modification of the imaginary part of quasi-normal frequency. So,
how many overtones have you included here?
Okay, so for the 0.8, we included 15 overtones. Then the 4.99, we include the 20 overtones. Yeah, so as the for highly spinning black holes, so many overtones are involved. So that's why,
Okay, so what determines this number? Why it's 20, not 30?
Which value are you talking about?
Yeah. Why did you choose 20 overtones, let's say, not 30 overtones?
Okay. I want to show the paper. All details are written here, but roughly speaking, we performed the fitting analysis first to see how many overtones are mainly excited in the ring down. Found that by changing the number of overtones we include in the fitting analysis, then we see that the mismatch between the data we computed and the quasi-normal model, we compute the mismatch, then the mismatch converges around the number of overtones around 15 or so, that's why the 20 is enough to see the convergence of the mismatch. In other words, the 30 overtones are not excited in the ring down. Almost 15 or so overtones are mainly excited. That's what we confirmed in the
For highly spinning black holes. So I wrote a paper roughly 10 years ago. So these overtones are excited collectively. So the excitation factor has a relation, and if you sum them up, they're not, so in a finite duration time, they're not, the collective behavior of this signal is not a exponential decay. It's a 1/t decay. So I suspect that you can your Bayesian analysis not with like 20 overtones with 40 parameters for the fitting. You can just use the Pauli signal for the fitting for your 0.99 in case. So you might want to look at that.
Thank you. Okay, I check it out. So you say that the Pauli tail may contribute to the ring down, is that right?
Yeah, the summation of all the excitation of overtones give you a Pauli tail.
I see. Okay. That sounds interesting. Okay, I see. I'll check it out. Yeah. I didn't know that. Thank you very much. Okay. So if there's no question, so I will move on. So anyway, so by performing the fitting analysis and by computing the base factor, we found that still the determination of the imaginary part of crazy normal frequency looks challenging, even with RISA. But also the determination of the real part of crazy normal frequency, it looks promising. But in this sense, and also based on another problem, other problems, we need the, I think we can, there's a motivation to go beyond this methodology or strategy to test GR with QNMOs. This has a few issues, like crazy normal modes are exponentially damped in time. So it's a bit challenging and difficult to precisely determine the crazy normal frequency. And but the next generation observation may solve this. And also the extracting the crazy normal frequencies may involve many fitting parameters. As Juan asked to me before, so we include many crazy normal frequencies. For 0.99, for example, we include 1 plus 20 crazy normal frequency. And for each crazy normal mode, we have to assign the two free parameters, the amplitude and the phase. Yeah, so many, many fitting parameters are involved. It may lead to the overfitting, which is an unphysical thing, so yeah. Dangerous things. And also, this analysis is very sensitive to the choice of the start time of being done. So this may lead to the uncertainty in the analysis. So these a few can be serious issues may lead to the, this question. So are crazy normal modes unique quantity to test GL in strong gravity regimes? In other words, is there any other no-hair quantity to test GL? No-hair quantity means that the quantity which determined only by the mass and the spin of the remnant black hole only. Then my answer is, I would say it's gray body factor of the black hole. Gray body factor is, and sometimes appear in the analysis of Hawking radiation though, it tells us the transmissivity or reflectivity of the black hole. As a black hole, perturbation involves the angular momentum barrier around the right ring of the black hole. Then if we consider the particle plunging into the black hole, the particle emits gravitational waves, then the gravitational waves can be scattered to infinity. Then the ring down is nothing but the signal sourced by the kind of vibration of the right ring, angular momentum barrier. So this may lead to the emission of the ring down in this way. Anyway, so to explain what I want to show, let's compute the gravitational wave signal from the extreme mass ratio margins. Then Juan said, we can compute the semi-analytic way, we can compute the gravitational waves by solving the equation, Sasaki Nakamura equation, for example, or even Tchaikovsky equation and Chandrasekhar Weyla equation, yeah. Is fine, yeah. But yeah, I basically use a Sasaki Nakamura equation. Then this source term is determined by the trajectory of the particle. Then here, I didn't include a self force. So this can be justified for a prancing orbits than the extreme mass, no, extreme mass ratio margin. Yeah. Then from by solving this equation, we can obtain the signal in spectrum, and the red lines show the real part of quasi-normal frequencies up to 15 overtones. So the, it takes the peak around the quasi-normal frequencies. This may footprint of the ring down. Then the, by performing the inverse Fourier transform, we can obtain the signal even in the time domain. Then, yeah, so this is a result of the numerical computation in the spectrum in the frequency domain. The same one, this one. Then the this and this are both the same things, but I plot in the linear, and I plot the spectrum in the log and linear. Then you can find the excitation of the quasi-normal frequency and the importantly, the exponential cutoff here. Then if you think that the, this is the excitation of the quasi-normal frequencies, then if you consider the, only the fundamental mode dominates the signal, as the spectrum of the fundamental quasi-normal modes takes the 1 over omega tail as like this, the power law tail as like this. It cannot explain the exponential cutoff. So the exponential cutoff, I would argue that this cutoff is a footprint of the interference effect among the excited fundamental mode and overtones. But anyway, for by changing the spin parameters, then computing the spectrum, we still have the exponential cutoff at like this. Then it's almost plateau, flat, smaller than the frequency of the real part of quasi-normal frequencies. Then here, mu h is a superlinear frequency, and the mu naught is a real part of the fundamental quasi-normal modes. For here, 2-2 modes, LM is 2-2. Then this shape reminds me of the Fermi-Dirac distribution. You know, at higher frequencies, this Fermi-Dirac distribution has the exponential cutoff with the Boltzmann factor, same. And it's almost plateau. Also, this shape may depends on the slightly depends on the initial data of the particle passing into the black hole. But roughly speaking, this looks like a Fermi-Dirac distribution. Okay, so anyway, it looks like mu is roughly given by mu h or mu naught. So we can read T, in other words, the temperature in the Boltzmann factor by performing the fitting analysis. Okay. So in other words, we can just read the slope of this red dashed line. Then this is the result. So T is the best fit value of the exponential cutoff. Then this TH is a Hawking radiation, a Hawking temperature in the natural units. So in the natural units, so that's why all the Hawking, when we say Hawking temperature, it involves the H bar, but now we consider the classical phenomenon. So I have to say this TH is a Hawking frequency. If we move to the frequency, this quantity does not involve the H bar, just defined by the kind of, how to say this, in the surface gravity divided by 2 pi, like that. Anyway, we can compare the best fit value of T with th, for example. Then this plot corresponds to this one. Then we compute the relative error with respect to the frequency. T naught is a frequency defined by the fundamental quasi-normal damping time. And TH is, as I have explained, Hawking frequency. Then this is the result. The remarkable thing is that although for intermediate spins, let me say 0.9, even 0.9 is intermediate. For intermediate spins, the error is a bit larger, but I think for higher harmonics, it's relatively small. But remarkable thing is that once we consider the near extremal limit, the relative error for the between the best fit value of T obtained in the GW waveform and the Hawking frequency is very small. Yeah, so the Hawking frequency takes 0.0197. Then the T read from the GW spectrum is 0.0198 and so on. Yeah. It's implicitly suggests that we can model the, if we understand this slope comes from the ring down spectrum, we could model the ring down spectrum with the Fermi-Dirac distribution with Hawking frequency and with the chemical potential of the mu h or mu naught. Why is that so? Then my answer is, in my understanding, this comes from the gravity factor of the black hole. You know, now I'm considering the this trajectory, then this may lead to the scattered Gravitational waves, as like this. So this ring down, in this ring down, the reflectivity of the angular momentum barrier may be imprinted. Then the reflectivity is nothing but the one minus gray body factors of the black hole, as the gray body factor is a transmissivity of the angular momentum barrier. Then indeed, the reflectivity of the angular momentum barrier of the black hole can be modeled by the Fermi-Dirac distribution based on the WKB approximation. Then once we assume the reflectivity of the black hole can be modeled as like this, then the gray body factor and the one minus gray body factor, I computed the one minus gray body factor numerically, then I read this T of the gray body factor numerically, then it approaches to the Hawking frequency, indeed approaches the Hawking frequency in the near extremal limit. Then let me again say that this is not Hawking temperature, but factorized by the H band over KB. It's a Hawking frequency. This can be defined in the classical way. But anyway, if we say this Hawking frequency as a Hawking temperature, this is a kind of the apparent thermal ring down from an extremal mass ratio margins. Then as a Hawking temperature or Hawking frequency approaches to zero in the extremal situation, the thermal excitation is getting suppressed as it approaches to the near extreme situation. Then the Fermi surface appears at the superlative frequency, and below which we have the Fermi degeneracy. So this remind me of the so Cronfitch, I expect that the ring down can be modeled by thermal film system. Then actually, we have the supporting evidence for that. So the looking at the configuration of the quasi normal frequency in the near extrema limit, Hot and the Fan Yang, Fan Yang also, theoretically shown that the quasi normal frequencies in the extrema limit can be written as like this analytically. Then this is nothing but the Matsubara frequencies, Matsubara poles of the frame depth distribution, as like this. However, there is a mystery to me. So in looking at the looking at the quasi-normal frequency of the car, even in the extremal limit, we indeed have the a kind of isolated mode. It behaves in a different, it behaves like a different way from the other quasi-normal frequencies. I don't know the origin of this irregular behavior of the isolated mode, but if we once we ignore this, we can admit the similarity between the quasi-normal frequencies of the car in the extreme situation and the Matsubara frequencies. This may be supporting evidence of this conjecture. Okay, so let me summarize my talk. So in the former part of this talk, I discussed the excitability of overtones. Then to quantify that, we can compute the excitation factor. And I have shown that the fifth overtones has a peak of the excitation factors for the spin parameter of 0.7, which is consistent with the result of the numerical relativity done by the previous work. Then in the latter part of this talk, I propose the gray body factor, measuring gray body factor, not quasi normal frequencies, can be also useful to test the no-hair theorem of the black hole or gravity, general relativity. Then the gray body factor may be imprinted on the ring down waveform, especially for extreme mass ratio mergers that can be observable in the future, for example, by laser. Then the exponential cutoff appears in the ring down spectrum. And that's the footprint of the gray body factor Boltzmann cutoff. Then if we regard it as a Boltzmann factor, the temperature is a Hawking temperature in the nature, in the natural units. In other words, Hawking frequency. Then in the near extremal limit, frame surface appears, the would-be frame surface appears at the superlative frequency. And indeed, quasi-normal modes, the structure of the quasi-normal modes becomes very similar to the Matsubara modes of the frame jack distribution in the near extreme. Okay, thank you very much. That's all.
Thank you, Navika. Any questions?
Yeah, thanks for that talk. I just have a question about your that's the antenna. Sorry. About your excitation peaking around n equal 5. I mean, do you have an intuition of why? I mean, that number cannot be a fluke. If real, there should be an explanation behind it. I mean, if one understands the overtones as a number of kind of zero crossing, is it because well, the structure of that mode has something to say as to the structure of the perturbation that is ensuing in the merger, to try and see if you then can link it up as to a potential variation of that n with the spin or the perturbation characteristics.
I don't get your question. So are you asking why do the n equal 5 is the most important? That's your question?
Yeah, basically. I mean, there has to be, I mean, 5 is not anywhere more special than 3 or 27. So there has to be some understanding, okay, I think, behind that to then solidify that observation, right? I mean, have you thought of any potential explanation?
Okay, so let me see. Yeah, I will try to answer the question. Let me see. I have the another slide. Okay. So I want to show you the different slides. So let me stop sharing now. So let me see. I don't know if this is a reason, but okay, so this is the excitation factors with respect to the Overton numbers. Then we indeed see the peak at n equal 5 here, for example, 4.7. This should be J in the previous in slides. Then looking at the real part of quasi-normal frequencies, we have the kind of corner like this, where the real part of the quasi-normal frequencies locally takes this minimum value locally as it is corner. Then I don't know if this has a physical meaning, but this corner corresponds to the peak of the excitation factors. And then indeed the excitation factor is a definition. Excitation factor includes the value of the quasi-normal frequencies as well. I think this small value of the real part of quasi-normal frequency leads to the peak of the excitation factors. But I don't know the explicit relation between them and the reason why the excitation factor has a peak at n equal 5. But this might be a hint for your question. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, Naritaka, how are you?
Hi, Nils, how are you? I'm fine.
I guess it's like 2 in the morning there, right?
It's 4 a.m. now.
So it's just time to wake up. Just a quick question. It's very nice. This Fermi Dirac distribution that you're finding, I was just curious, if you look at different times, does the shape of the spectrum change? Because in some sense, you could do it for late times and early times, and do you include that in spiral parts or not? Mm-hmm. Because it's
Okay, so this plot includes all of them. Signal in spectrum includes the gravitational waves sourced by these trajectories. So then the performing the inverse Fourier transform, this includes the even before the ring down signals, includes the ring down signals. So that's why this includes all of things. But I performed the fitting analysis of quasi-normal frequencies in the frequency domain, not in time domain. Then the that shows that the ring down comes from the that, for example, this exponential cutoff is a part of the ring down. So in this sense, then the, my argument is that the footprint of the Fermi Dirac distribution comes from the this exponential cutoff. So in other words, the Fermi Dirac distribution comes from the ring down signal, not the orbital trajectory GW. Then also, if we extract the signal only at ray times, of course the fundamental modes dominates the signal. Then the shape of the spectrum should have the 1 over omega tail in such a situation as all as signals strongly suppressed, like overtones. And of course, there's no orbital signals in such a situation. So this exponential cutoff is reproduced by the ring down signal, including the early part of the ring down signal.
Right. So I think it would be interesting to see if you like use different trajectories or just fit not the early parts, and see how much your conclusions like this the temperatures that you get change.
That's a good point. Then actually I indeed tested. Then So for example, this trajectory. For this trajectory, the orbital angular momentum of the particle is the 1 in the unit of m equals to 0.5 and the j equals 0.99. Then I try the half of the angular momentum, orbital angular momentum, or other value of the angular momentum. Then the all of them leads to the same value of the 0.0198. 0.99, but I still did not try the other trajectory, more general trajectory. Like, for example, in this trajectory, I assume the trajectory is restricted on the equatorial plane. But I don't know if more other general trajectories relaxing the condition on the equatorial plane. Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I have a question if you don't mind.
Sure.
Sure, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean I have to confess that the last portion of the talk for me was a little bit harder to swallow. I mean, I think you gave a great talk, but the last part seemed very speculative. And I think it was cast in language that was, I think, provocative. But my point is that so you showcased the Green's function formula earlier in your talk, and the Green's function formula is a precise encoding of properties of the source properties of the reflection coefficient or the reflectivity of the black hole. So instead of presenting things in a very speculative way, I think you could make everything very precise based on the Green's function formula. And one thing that you didn't talk about is, you know, in the case of your last example is, you know, what is the frequency spectrum of your source? You know, couldn't there be an exponential cutoff built in to the source itself as opposed to the black hole properties? I'm not saying it's not in the black hole properties, but what I'm saying is that instead of, you know, presenting this in a very speculative way, you have all the ingredients required to make all of that very precise. And I'm not sure why you're not doing that.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, so then I did not have the slide, but let me show you the kind of the relevance between the Green's function and the Gray-Boy factors. So let me just quickly stop the sharing. So then, well, let me see. Yeah, actually, I indeed try to see this in that way. Maybe this one. Okay. So let me see. Yes, this one. Okay. Well, I think you can see this paper. Actually, this may appear tomorrow's archive as a replacement. And then I try to see this from the Green's function point of view. X is this one. X is this one. Then this part is a kind of a part of Green's function, and then this can be written as like this, and then now we are interested in the ring down, right? Then the ring down has the poles of the quasi normal modes. Then actually the 1 over b factor leads to the poles that comes from the Green's function of the black hole perturbation. Then the point is a over b with some factors of the polynomial with respect to the frequency omega is nothing but the reflectivity of the black hole angular momentum barrier. So in this way, we can indeed derive the reflectivity of the black hole from the Green's function. And then then based on the WKB approximation, this takes the form of this. So I think you are right. Yeah, so Green's function is very important to see this. And I agree with you. And we can see that in that way, I think. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, good. Well, that satisfies me a lot more. And if I would suggest something, I mean, to present it as a Hawking frequency instead of surface gravity seems, you know, to convey a lot of very mysterious meaning. But mm-hmm. surface gravity is a perfectly classical and understandable feature of a black hole. And I don't think it's too surprising that it would come out of an analysis like this. And unless you really want to play the provocative route here, the provocative card, I would say, you know, it would be a lot more sensible to talk about it as surface gravity instead of, you know, a mysterious Hawking frequency, which, you know, mm-hmm. you're trying to diffuse that impression. But, you know, if you say something Hawking, it's got to be quantum, right? And even if you're deflating this through that equation, it still has this mysterious aspect to it that I'm not sure you should emphasize. I mean, I don't think it shouldn't be that mysterious in the end.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. I sense. Yeah, Hawking temperature may be kind of misleading. Yeah. Hawking frequency. Yeah. Surface gravity. Yeah. It sounds reasonable, yeah. Since now we deal with classical, completely classical one. So yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your talk.
Thank you.
Hi, very last talk. I have two questions. The first is looking at your figure constraint, the derivation of quasi normal frequency. Can you go back to this
page? Sure. This one?
Yeah. Since you have used Manning overtones, and you derive this, you have defined this derivation of frequency delta f r and delta f i. You so it seems you use the only two parameters, but you have many overtones.
Yeah. Okay, I understand. For the modification of the quasi-normal frequencies, we have only two parameters. And in other words, we modify the quasi-normal frequencies kind of homogeneously. So for all, including the fundamental mode and overtones, for all modes, we put the modification with the same rate of delta FR and delta FI. So that's why with respect to the modification, we have only two parameters. Yeah, but of course—
Okay, for the realistic, for the realistic case, different quasi-normal frequency or overtones, you will have different parameters, right?
I agree with you, yeah. So for more, general case, yeah. This is kind of toy.
Okay, I see. So the second question is, did you notice this paper by Colin and Capano, H.O.? They declare the detection of multiple quasi-normals in GW 190521. And they find this 330 modes.
Yes, I know that paper.
Yeah, according to your excitation of Hale overtones, they didn't detect this overtones, but they detect this another Hale LM modes.
Yes.
Did you have
I think we could do this similar thing, especially for a kind of a higher mass ratio merger events. So otherwise, only two modes dominate the signal, but as the mass ratio is getting higher, other angular modes, not overtones, other angular modes are excited more strongly. So that's why, we could do the, we could, read the, not only the overtone, but also the angular modes will be detected. And I think it's more easier than the detection of overtones, since the overtones has almost a similar value of the real part of quasi-normal frequencies. So it's like there's a degeneracy in the frequency domain. But for the different angular modes, we have the different, we have the two peaks or three peaks at a different position in the frequency domain. So the detection of the high angular modes is more promising than the detection of the overtones. That's my opinion, so yeah.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. If no more questions, let's thank Taka again for the very nice talk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.